Advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Monday edition. People out earning those Trump endorsements. Big one offered very recently, Dr. Oz. Are you familiar with the guy, Dr. Oz? Vance Brand, you must be familiar. You know who Dr. Oz is.
He's the one who talked about poop to a lot of people on TV, like in a medical way.
Well, I saw him complaining about $6 salsa prices.
Oh.
You know, if there's ever an example of rampant inflation, it's salsa prices. And apparently he did a video at a local market, you know, Dr. Oz. But the ironic part, the part that, you know, social media kind of held against him, on his candidate disclosures, he lists his net worth somewhere north of $400 million.
Oh, okay. So he totally goes to the supermarket all the time.
Perhaps the differential salsa price is, you know, not going to wreck his retirement, let's just say.
Maybe he's thinking that, you know, the salsa price is really what's driving people into poverty, is that the salsa is just too much for everyone. And, you know, everybody wants salsa, and you can't live without salsa.
Well, especially if it's made in New York City.
Oh, my goodness. Not the pay stuff.
CNN, Chris Saliza reporting. For Donald Trump, all the world's a stage, and the most important people on it are the ones on TV. What about the radio? The fact was borne out over the weekend when Trump endorsed TV doctor Dr. Oz over the hedge fund rich guy David McCormick in advance of next month's Republican Senate primary. Now, that's in the state of Pennsylvania. Let's not forget, not every state aligns in terms of when they're holding their primaries. State of Georgia is going to be a big one. That's coming up in early May. And that's Brian Kemp, the current gubernator of Georgia. And I think that Trump's endorsed, David Perdue, not Sonny Perdue. Now, Sonny Perdue used to be his ag secretary, but David Perdue is the Republican that lost his Senate seat back on January 5th. The day before the insurrection, if I recall correctly. A little bit more here from Chris Saliza. The words Trump used to announce his endorsement of Dr. Oz are telling.
I have known Dr. Oz for many years, as have many others, even if only through his very successful television show. He has lived with us through the screen and has always been popular, respected, and smart.
At a rally in North Carolina, where oddly Trump talked about the endorsement of Oz, the former president, was even more blunt about the reasoning behind his pick.
When you're on television for 18 years, that's like a poll. That means people like you.
Is that the only standard? Consider what all Trump is saying there. One, Dr. Oz was on TV regularly for more than a decade. Two, that makes him famous. Three, it also makes him popular. Four, Trump likes famous, popular people who are on TV. As Saliza writes, that's basically it. Trump isn't endorsing Oz for any reason other than Oz, like Trump, is on TV. That's good enough for Trump. To understand the logic, you have to understand how central a role television plays in the life and political thoughts and opinions of Donald Trump. Remember, all the way back in August of 2015, oh, those were simpler times, Fancy Brian. Shortly after Trump had announced his candidacy, the following exchange happened between Trump and NBC's Chuck Todd. Who do you talk to for military advice right now? Chuck Todd. SD Chuck Todd, that guy asking. Trump.
Well, I watch the shows. I mean, I really see a lot of great, you know, when you watch your show and all of the other shows and you have the generals.
Military advice from watching the shows. During the presidency, the trend continued. He would tape or have tape. Is anyone still using tape? I'm just asking.
I guarantee you that every single one of the Republicans has switched back to VHS if Trump decided to go to VHS, because they're very strong people that have to follow and fawn over this horrible person who needs to go and like celebrities.
Don't get the DVR. I lose the discs all the time. They're no good. Only the VHS.
It's beta. It's all beta. It's always been beta. Beta's been number one the whole time.
During his presidency, the trend continued. He would tape or have taped. His favorite shows, watching them to relax. How relaxing. He had a TV installed in the private White House dining room. His Twitter feed, back when he got permanently banned from the social media service, was filmed with often embittered comments about cable TV shows he didn't watch. The low-rated, you know, remember that? He'd always, like, crap on some show that he never watches. I never watch Morning Joe, but I heard him say this morning, but I never watch because it's so low-rated.
Yeah, like, that's just unnecessary. Get to the point. Oh, wait, you don't have one.
He often described members of his cabinet inner circle as
out of central casting.
He likes those people out of central casting.
I don't think he's ever been to central casting because it's different.
Well, TV then is and always has been the way that Trump relates to the world. If it's on TV, it's real to Trump. And if it's on TV for a long time, as he would often note in his show, The Apprentice was, then it and the person behind it, well, they must be good. You know, good people are on TV, Fancy Brian, and pretty and handsome.
Yeah, Mark Burnett's a really good producer. He even made Trump look like he had an idea of what he was doing.
Also, never forget this. For Trump, the fundamental calculation isn't good or bad in any moral sense. There's no part of his calculation to endorse Oz that dealt with whether the TV doctor would actually make a good senator. Well, why would you even factor that in? No. For Trump, the world is split between those who can do things for him and those who can't. Oz, because he's on TV, can win, and by winning, that makes Donald Trump look good. So, Viola, Trump endorses Oz. That's it. That's the only calculation. He's got a TV show.
What's the worst that could happen? It's not like he's doing, you know, doing his foreign policy or even his border policy based on. Oh wait, he is. He actually designed his foreign policy, his border policy, based on Day of the Soldat. It was a sequel too. It was like the Day of the Soldat. It was number two. And what the. Sicario 2, Day of the Soldat, and that is how Trump formed his border policy. You can tell from his speeches, it was the same plot.
You've mentioned that a few times. I'm not familiar with either of the films, but apparently Trump watched. I had seen some reporting there.
Yeah, enough to make his foreign policy based on it, yes.
Yes. Well, why wouldn't you make foreign policy predicated on what's on the boob tube?
It's all real, right? They put it on there. It's so real that you have to pretty much believe everything. And that's nothing to worry about at all, that the president of the United States believes the things that he sees on TV and thinks that that's real. And that's why Dr. Oz is somehow really fit to be a legislator.
You know what I found very interesting of late, Fancy Brian? You know what they talk about a lot, the Republicans, when they get their big TV hits or... You know, they're in a confirmation hearing for a judicial appointment, and they want to make some points on TV. Well, they talk a lot about grooming, right? These pedophiles. Well, you know, someone finally did a commentary on the four stages of groomer speech. You know, it's sort of an evolution, if you didn't notice, Fancy Brian.
I thought they didn't believe in that.
Let me throw this out there. There's something I've been meaning to tell you. My dad is a pedophile. I'm not the victim. As always, though, there's never just one. The ties that bound my family have largely come undone. Now, I'm reading from someone else's work here. I was not the victim, nor, as far as I can tell, is anyone that I'm directly related to a pedophile.
But luckily, we have it recorded now.
We will delete that later. Pain is not a feature, not a bug of our lives. It's a story without ending, never mind a happy one. So you can imagine what it felt like to see Republicans in the United States Senate use the word pedophile as well as child predator during the confirmation hearings of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Their use of it was loose, irrelevant, warped, and worse. The purpose was advancing conspiracy theories already spreading. The goal was smearing the new Supreme Court justice with the smell of evil. Worst of all, by overusing it, they watered down the word. They hollowed out its primary moral essence. They created conditions in which my dad and other pedophiles can now plausibly say their crimes aren't as bad as they say. Just look at what the Democrats are doing. Child abuse, predation, child molestation, and rape. These are real problems. Responsible citizens must find a humane way of addressing while serving the often conflicting needs for rehabilitation and justice. These are real social, political, and criminal problems. By belittling them, the Republicans insult us. They piss into wounds of real victims, too. Again, this is someone else's writing. That's what you'd expect from a political party operating on the edge of political violence. Judge Jackson's confirmation hearings were a case in point. According to Gabrielle Rosenberg, a professor of gender, sexuality, and feminist studies at Duke, during an interview, Professor Rosenberg told me through the four stages of groomer speech. Here's a quote. You're seeing a way in which partisan interests are pursued through the figure of the pedophile, not because any of these people give a damn about the sexual well-being of children, but because it's an incredibly charged and politically potent thing they can hurl. On Twitter, you're offered an analysis of the rhetoric surrounding Florida's new Don't Say Gay legislation. That rhetoric seems to weaponize words like pedophile and child predator and other things beyond the pale. Now, let's talk about the four stages of the groomer language. The basic thesis of what I'm calling the groomer panic, which I think is coherently understood as a moral panic or sex panic, is that it has the capacity to be significantly more dangerous than comparable sex panics in the past in which similar sorts of rhetorical weaponization of the terms pedophile or child predator had been deployed. It has the possibility of spilling into actual political violence. I made four points. First, groomer speech is the use of the metaphor of child sexual abuse to describe educational content that right-wing forces disapprove of. They call it groomer speech. A little bit more. This metaphor of violent physical harm is being used to describe a disagreement over educational content and the underlying speech acts constituting that content. There is a confusion about different kind of harm and confusion about the differences between speech and act. Second, this confusion means concrete evidence of child sex abuse is no longer necessary. Instead, the evidence is the speech act itself. It becomes the case then that anyone can be credibly accused of being a groomer, not because there's evidence of grooming, but because such a person has descended from a preferred framework amongst conservatives for the understanding of Florida's Don't Say Gay law. Groomer describes descent from conservatism writ large. There is a specificity to the claim about a pedophile that is itself unique and dramatic. I describe it as having an eliminationist intention. Third, groomer speech is distinguishable from subjugating speech. Subjugating speech might incite violence. It's possible. It has before. But broadly, it's intended to justify social and political inequities. Pedophile is a specific term, however. It carries, at least in the right-wing communities, a claim that the individual in question is pathologically invested in harming the most vulnerable members of society. There's no interest in governing such individuals. It's not about establishing them as second-class citizens. It's about putting them to death. It separates from the general class of what I'm calling subjugating speech intended to degrade or lessen a person, but isn't necessarily a suggestion that they or all people like them should be eliminated. And fourth, groomer speech is not being directed at minorities. At various points in American history, conservatives have accused gay people and other sexual and sometimes racial minorities of intending to prey on kids. They behave in predatory fashion towards children. What's interesting about groomer speech, what's most alarming about its use by the right, is the charge being directed at powerful people who cannot by any measure be identified as a minority. When Marjorie Taylor Greene said Mitt Romney is pro-pedophile, she's talking about the Republican Party's 2012 presidential nominee. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. Phone lines open. 844-967-2789.
I haven't got a brain. Only straw.
They call me the ratings machine.
What have they got that I ain't got?
Courage. You could say that again.
No, I don't take responsibility at all.